I'm Ron DeLegge, inventor of the Portfolio Report Card, which tells you if your investment plan is on or off track. No more guessing about your investment portfolio's fees, risk, tax efficiency, and performance. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to get started. Find out if your IRA, 401k plan, and investment account passes or fails. Take off the blinders and invest with confidence. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to get started and find out if your investment plan passes or fails.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Coming up on today's program, three rules for trading leveraged ETFs. Also coming up, my program guest is the author of a new book titled Dual Momentum Investing, an Innovative Strategy for Higher Returns and with Lower Risk. Gary Annotici will be joining us from his office in Northern California, so stay tuned for that. I'll also get into some of your emails and calls. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can tweet the program live. You can also email me, ron@indexshow.com. If you have not had the chance to take my portfolio challenge, here it is. A direct challenge to all listeners with investment portfolios between $75,000 in value up to $10 billion. Yes, you heard right, up to $10 billion. If your portfolio's value is above $10 billion, congratulations, you don't need a portfolio report card. If you're at $9.9 billion, you need a portfolio report card. And if your IRA, 401k plan, or brokerage account gets an A after completing Ron DeLegge's portfolio report card challenge, I will pay you $100. Are you ready? Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to get started. So let's begin by taking a look at what's going on with the market. Now, I'd like to look at the psychology of the market, of all financial markets, because it really tells us what the mood is. And one of the barometers that I like to follow is that of momentum stocks, the iShares MSCI USA Momentum Factor ETF. Now, that's ticker symbol MTUM, which I think is a good proxy for the risk appetite of bullishly trending stocks versus the S&P 500. So MTUM owns high momentum stocks and what you might say is riskier stocks, stocks that are more volatile versus the broader market. And if we take a look at the performance of MTUM versus, let's say, just the S&P 500 ETF, SPY, since the beginning of 2015, you will note that momentum stocks are outperforming the broader market by a rather healthy margin. MTUM up almost 5% since the beginning of the year versus SPY, which tracks the S&P 500, ahead by 2.6%. So that kind of gives you a quick gander at what the psychology of the market is. And yes, the psychology of the market or the market's mood, its sentiment, is what shapes prices. MTUM's top holdings, by the way, some of them include, at least in the top 10 holdings, include Apple, Facebook, and Microsoft, along with a few healthcare stocks like Amgen, CVS Health Corp, and Gilead Sciences. So these are some of the momentum stocks that are pushing MTUM higher. And again, it just explains very quickly the risk appetite of the market. Now, volatility, as all of our listeners should know, sleeps, but risk doesn't. Let me repeat that because that's important. Volatility sleeps, but risk doesn't. And although higher stock prices have kept a lid on stock market volatility, we know that risk is something that never goes away. Now, the VIX, which is also known as the S&P 500 Volatility Index, it's also known as the Fear Index, has fallen almost 20% over the past month. Volatility, the VIX, is now below its 200-day moving average. Can you believe this? In other words, volatility has been declining. And the question is, does the stock market's general lack of fear mean that volatility has reached a permanently low plateau? That's the question, because many are claiming that that is the case. Well, what has happened in the recent historical past every time the VIX has dipped below its 200-day moving average? Does anybody know? Well, let me give you a quick summary of what's occurred in the VIX, and this will get you volatility bulls excited, because every time the VIX since September of 2014 has dipped below its 200-day moving average, it's led to the following surges: up 24%, up 171%, up 27%, up 23%, up 118%, and up 62%. Those are the numbers that the VIX, or the amount the VIX has surged every single time it's dipped below its 200-day moving average since September of 2014. Will we see a similar surge in the upcoming weeks? For now, all is safe and calm in the worry-free U.S. equity market. That's, of course, until the unexpected moment when it's suddenly not. 877-711-5611 is the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. This is where we talk about the birds and the bees of successful investing. And coming up a little bit later on today's program, my guest is going to be Gary Annaticci. He's the author of a new book titled Dual Momentum Investing. And he's going to explain some of the strategies that you can use inside the non-core part of your portfolio. You know, the non-core complements the core, and it's, for that reason, smaller in size compared to your core portfolio. Your core portfolio is always in a broad mix of low-cost index ETFs touching all the major asset classes. That's your core. Your non-core could be invested in non-core asset classes, like individual stocks, venture capital, private equity, collectibles, volatility, derivatives, as well as leveraged long and leveraged short ETFs. And speaking of leveraged ETFs, I'm going to explain to you on today's show three rules for trading leveraged ETFs. And these types of ETFs aim to magnify their daily performance. That's what leverage means. It's a fancy word for magnify performance. And of course, the bull funds will magnify performance to the upside, whereas the bear funds aim to magnify performance when the underlying securities, whether those be bonds or stocks or commodities, fall in value. So the bear funds that use leverage, again, will magnify performance when those underlying assets fall in value. So we're going to set out some guidelines or some rules that you should use in your own strategies for when you decide to use leveraged ETFs in your non-core portfolio. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be some very helpful tips for some of our listeners that use leveraged ETFs. Now, taking a look at some of the industry sectors within the S&P 500, and this will give you a real good example and understanding of what's moving the market and what the metrics are behind the broader moves in stocks. Now, S&P 500, you can divide it into nine different industry sectors. You've got stocks that follow, for example, the technology sector, financials, healthcare, materials, industrials, consumer staples, consumer discretionary. These are some of the major sectors within the S&P 500. And taking a look at which sectors are performing the best so far in 2015, XLB. That's B like boy. XLB, which tracks material stocks, ahead by 6.3%. Since the beginning of the year, this is the top performing S&P 500 industry sector this year thus far. XLV, which tracks healthcare stocks, also doing very well, ahead by 5.85%. Those are the two top performing S&P sectors. And then some of the bottom performing sectors, the ones that are lagging: XLU, which tracks utility stocks, down 4.3%, and then financial stocks down about 1.5%. Some of those banks, financial institutions, and insurance companies underperforming the broader S&P 500. And by the way, SPY, which tracks S&P 500, up around 2.5% year to date. So that's what's going on sector-wise. How is your portfolio performing? Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to find out. I will analyze and grade your portfolio and tell you how you're doing. Do you get an A, B, C, D, or F? Find out! I'm Ron DeLegge. More coming up. Go nowhere.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
All right, welcome back from the break. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can follow us there. You can also tweet the program 24/7. If you ever miss our regular radio broadcast for whatever reason, you can pick up our podcast. It's available at iTunes as well as Stitcher Radio. And while you're there, while you're subscribing to our podcast, please be sure to also give our program a review. That way others like yourself can find the show and, of course, enjoy your feedback. Now, if you'd like to get a portfolio report card where I analyze and grade your portfolio in five areas and tell you how you're doing, go to PortfolioReportCard.com. If you get an A, I pay you $100. And the five grading categories are cost, risk, diversification, tax efficiency, and performance. Those five things are the only things that matter with regard to an investment portfolio. I don't care if your portfolio is worth only $10,000, $10 million, or $10 billion. Those five things are the only things that matter. Cost, risk, diversification, tax efficiency, and performance. Again, go to PortfolioReportCard.com to find out and get started. Now, we're going to cover on today's show three rules for trading leveraged ETFs. Stay tuned for that. Also, my program guest, Gary Annatici. He's author of a brand new book called Dual Momentum Investing, an innovative strategy for higher returns with lower risk. He's warming up in the bullpen. He'll be joining me in the next segment. Stay tuned for that. And I want to get into some of your email questions that you've submitted to me. I'll do that in a second. And before I do that, I want to explain to you just some of the things so that you can have an understanding of what Ron DeLegge is all about, what Ron DeLegge stands for, and what he doesn't stand for. So let me just explain to you what the host of this program, Ron DeLegge, believes in. I believe that making money is half the battle. Keeping it is the other half. I believe that being a good saver doesn't automatically make you a good investor. I believe that the word risk, right after love, is the most misunderstood word in the human language. I also believe that 99% of all statistics only tell us 49% of the story. You want to know what else I believe? I believe that target date retirement funds are a great idea for everyone except you and everybody that you know. I also believe that financial regulators, like the feathers of an ostrich, exist mainly for decorative purposes. I believe that illustrating 50-year plus investment time horizons is adorably cute but dishonest. I also believe that the media is often more misinformed than the audience. I believe that your investment portfolio should not be a source of anxiety. I believe that the road to satisfactory performance is by maximizing diversification and minimizing cost, risk, and taxes. I believe a credible investment framework with sustainable results does not require clever software apps, expensive technology, or an MBA. Those are all the things I believe in, that I stand for. Now, there's a couple of things that I don't believe. And what are those? Well, I don't believe in accidental millionaires and accidental billionaires. I also don't believe that long-term investing is the panacea for a misaligned investment portfolio. I don't believe in invincible algorithms or magic formula investing or foolproof trading systems or other mythical concoctions. I don't believe in any of that nonsense. I also don't believe in lazy investment portfolios or lazy anything. There's nothing about your portfolio and your investments that should be lazy. And I don't believe that all roads lead to the same place. So those are some of the things that Ron DeLegge stands for, full disclosure. And I think that's important that you understand where I'm coming from. And that's why we do this weekly show, to give you a framework that helps you to have a logical investment plan that helps you to get ahead with the least amount of cost, the least amount of taxes, and also the least amount of risk. So look at your own portfolio, and if you're underperforming, well, it's time to reverse the curse, time to make some changes. Now, when we do a portfolio report card, all that I can do is diagnose your portfolio. All I can do is identify the strengths and the weaknesses of what you're doing. I can't do anything more than that. The onus is on you. And this is where an actual change has to come in, where you have to recognize that if you've got weaknesses in your portfolio, that once we've identified those weaknesses, you've got to have the onus, you've got to have the desire to want to be better. Unfortunately, some of you just aren't ready for that. Some of you don't want to be better. Some of you are stubborn. Some of you fight me. Some of you challenge me. You're combative when you get a portfolio report card. Well, all I can say is I can't help you, because you have to help yourself. And once you've been diagnosed, well, then it's up to you to fix what's wrong with your portfolio, make the improvements, make the adjustments so that you can get ahead and stay ahead. 877-711-5611. That's the number. Ron@indexshow.com is my email address. And of course, my Twitter handle @indexshow. Be sure to tweet us, follow us 24/7. Now I want to get into some of your emails. Dear Ron, I'm a buy and hold investor with my money. However, I think about adding a tactically risk managed satellite to my portfolio. I like Mebane Faber's simple IV portfolio strategy based on the 10-month moving average. I think about reducing the exposure to all my ETFs, which trade below their 10-day moving average. Also, 200-day moving average is another threshold, and according to the satellite core proportion. I prefer simple risk management measures like this one because of the relative low trading frequency, the simple non-over-optimized calculation, and because of the clear signal when to re-enter a market. In my job as an institutional portfolio manager, I use similar stop-loss techniques, which have a higher turnover though. I always prefer rule-based decision-making over discretionary trading decisions, which get manipulated by greed, fear, and the media. At the moment, I'm not applying any risk management techniques in my own portfolio except rebalancing. Do you endorse risk management techniques like the mentioned one for private investors? What would be the proportion of the portfolio you would recommend to be affected by the measurements outlined? Signed, Julian in Germany. And Julian is actually, as he mentioned there, an institutional money manager. He's a quite sharp fella. You don't get that sort of a job accidentally. And here's my answer, Julian. When it comes to your core portfolio, your first line of defense is always making sure that you have the appropriate exposure to each of the major asset classes. And that will depend upon your age, your risk tolerance, your goals, your unique investor personality. And again, the right asset mix for your core is always your first line of defense. Now, what Julian is describing here is something that's designated for the non-core part of an investment portfolio, where you're jumping in and out completely, in and out of certain asset classes or certain ETFs, depending on moving averages or some other technical thresholds that you've established. Remember, the core portfolio never engages in this type of trading behavior, because the most tactical that a core portfolio will ever be is dialing up or dialing down your asset allocation to a certain ETF or asset class. Here's another way to think about it. The thermostat in your home, instead of shutting it off completely or leaving it on completely And every time it gets too hot or too cold, you shut it off and turn it on and shut it off and turn it on. What you're doing with the core portfolio is you're keeping it on that thermostat all the time, keeping exposure simultaneously to all those major asset classes, but you're simply adjusting up or down whether you want that thermostat to be warmer or cooler, and that's how your core portfolio should operate. I'm Ron DeLegge, and I'll be right back. Coming up next, our interview with Gary Anatici.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
Are you frustrated with how your investments never seem to grow? Do you feel like your investment plan might be off track? Are you concerned about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you're not alone. Get the help you need with Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card. Get a snapshot of your current investments and find out if your financial plan is really on track. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Millions of people are investing blindly in the stock market. Don't be one of them. Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card tells you everything you need to know about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Traditional IRA, Roth IRA, 401k plan, or brokerage account. It doesn't matter what you have. Ron's free portfolio report card will tell you everything you need to know. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Don't invest without it.
Momentum investing has long been a popular trading strategy, and here to join us to talk about it with a new twist is Gary Anatici. He's the author of Dual Momentum Investing, an innovative strategy for higher returns with lower risk. It's available at Amazon.com. It's a brand new book, and it's on my recommended read list. Gary, welcome to the Index Investing Show. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Ron.
Dual Momentum Investing, an innovative strategy for higher returns and lower risk. So that's the title of your new book. And this refers to the combination of relative momentum and absolute momentum. So can you please explain to our audience the difference between relative and absolute momentum, and why does it matter?
Sure. Well, let's start out by defining what we mean by momentum. That means that initial superior performance leads to later periods of superior performance. So relative momentum, or relative strength, measures the performance of one asset against other assets. Absolute momentum looks at performance of an asset itself over time. So assets that have been going up during a certain period of time are expected to tend to keep going up. Relative momentum selects among a group of assets, then we use absolute momentum to check to see if the trend of that asset has been positive. If it is, we hold that asset, and if it isn't, we stand aside.
And so why do you think using both in conjunction is a better strategy?
Relative momentum does nothing to attenuate downside, so you still can have a lot of bear market volatility. Absolute momentum, being trend following, will allow you to avoid downside exposure to a great extent. Both forms of momentum will enhance return. So by combining the two together, you get an enhancement to return and a reduction in downside risk and volatility.
Now, you say that academic research has established momentum as something that works well across many different markets, including U.S. and foreign stocks, industry sectors, bonds, commodities, currencies, and real estate. Can you please familiarize our audience with just some of these findings about what makes momentum strategies work so well?
Well, no one is quite sure exactly why it works so well. They have documented that it does. The best explanations seem to be behaviorally based, in that investors tend to underreact and overreact. Taking stocks, for example, stocks underreact to new information, which is called the anchoring effect, and they later overreact through what's called the bandwagon effect, causing persistence in performance. So research has shown over a considerable period of time that momentum works for whatever reason across all different types of assets and across all different time periods.
Gary Anatici joining us. He's author of Dual Momentum Investing, an innovative strategy for higher returns with lower risk. It's available at Amazon.com. It's a 5-star rated book, got a lot of great reviews there. Now, what are the metrics that you use, Gary, to identify, let's say, individual stocks or ETFs with momentum characteristics?
Well, one of the great things about momentum is it doesn't depend on a lot of different metrics. There's only one essential one, and that's called the look-back or formation period, which is the metric that you use to measure your past performance. It's usually from 6 to 12 months. So having a specific look-back period is what distinguishes this type of rules-based, academic-style momentum from its practitioner counterpart, which often uses the term momentum to just mean price strength.
Now, what do you say to detractors that say that, well, momentum investing is nothing more than a glorified performance chasing? I mean, you do have detractors that have probably said that. What do you make of that argument?
Well, performance chasing is different because you don't have a specified, well-proven look-back period or formation period. People who chase performance might do it on a short-term basis, or they might do it on a very long-term basis. For example, many investment managers will look at 3 to 5 years of past performance to evaluate investment opportunities. Well, actually, the opposite of momentum occurs with a 3 to 5 year horizon, in that there's some mean reversion going on. So what's performed well over the past 3 to 5 years is very likely to not perform so well in the future. Whereas momentum is clearly defined as a 3 to 12 month look back period, particularly 6 to 12 months. And it's been well documented throughout academic research, going back over 200 years for relative strength momentum and now over 800 years for absolute trend following momentum.
Gary Antonacci joining us, author of Dual Momentum Investing, an innovative strategy for higher returns with lower risk. And that book is available at Amazon.com. Go pick up a copy. Now, growth investing is typically associated with momentum strategies, whereas value investing typically focuses on asset classes or stocks that are, let's say, out of favor or maybe mispriced. I think the biggest example of success in the value camp would be none other than Warren Buffett. Is there anyone in the growth or momentum investing camp that even approaches Buffett-like success?
Well, Buffett is kind of a unique case, but academic momentum has only been practiced for a few years. However, in a more generic sense of the word momentum, hedge fund managers would qualify under that category, and some of them have been very successful. Other successful momentum-style investors go all the way back to Jesse Livermore, Jack Dreyfuss, Gerald Tsai, Richard Driehaus, and commodity traders like Paul Tudor Jones, Richard Dennis, Louis Bacon, and Ed Sakota, and many others.
Do you believe that the financial markets are inefficient?
They're generally efficient, which means it's extremely hard to gain a consistent edge using just fundamental analysis, but the markets are not entirely efficient. Academics recognize anomalies that fly in the face of the efficient market hypothesis. Momentum is the strongest of those anomalies.
So you believe then that momentum investing can exploit some of these inefficiencies?
Definitely. Momentum is the easiest route for doing so. It's been well documented. It's pervasive, as Fama and French, leading academics, have said.
Now, just bringing this back, Gary, to the individual investor, what would you say is the easiest way for a person to apply some of the momentum strategies that you talk about in the book inside the, let's say, non-core part of their investment portfolio or tactical part of their portfolio?
Well, momentum is best known, the research of momentum is best known dealing with individual stocks. However, there are some problems there. Momentum does involve high transaction costs when you deal with individual stocks. There's high turnover. It also is the case that stocks that respond to high momentum tend to have wide bid-ask spreads. So I believe that momentum is better approached from using asset classes. Also, as I mentioned before, momentum, relative strength momentum is subject to high maximum drawdowns during bear markets. Relative strength momentum does little or nothing to mitigate this. So in my opinion, the best approach is the one that's represented in my book, Dual Momentum Investing, where you apply relative strength momentum to different asset classes, and then you use absolute momentum as the filter to decide whether to actually be in those asset classes at a given time or to stand aside into something safe like short-term bonds or treasury bills.
Makes great sense and great ideas. I mean, this is a wonderful book, and I highly recommend that our audience check it out. You just heard from Gary Annotici, author of Dual Momentum Investing, an innovative strategy for higher returns with lower risk. It's available at Amazon.com. Go pick up a copy. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. More when we return. Be here or be nowhere.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. And if you'd like to get a portfolio report card, find out how your investments are really doing, I don't care if you self-manage your account or if you have a financial advisor, the portfolio report card will tell you if your investment portfolio is healthy or unhealthy. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com and reach out. Now, we're going to talk about three rules for trading leveraged ETFs. And by now, you should know that leveraged ETFs very simply aim to magnify their daily exposure to whatever underlying asset class they're tracking. So you've got different flavors of these leveraged ETFs. For example, you've got certain funds like SPXL, which track the S&P 500 or stock market, that aim for triple daily leverage to their underlying index. So, for example, if the S&P 500 is up 1% on any given day, SPXL will aim to be up 3% or triple that daily performance. And so that's what we mean when we say leverage. You're magnifying the underlying performance of the fund. So what are the rules for using leveraged ETFs? Well, number one, and this is a big rule, is to use them only in sharply trending markets. So big performance gains with leveraged ETFs can be had in sharply trending markets. Now, for example, in a bearish market, bearish funds that aim for inverse or opposite performance are likely to do very well, whereas in a bull market that's sharply trending higher, bull funds like the one we just mentioned, SPXL, should be very large gainers. But in a market that's neutral, you definitely don't want to use leveraged ETFs because that's not really the ideal setting or climate for a leveraged ETF. You want a market that's sharply trending where there's lots of action in one direction, up or down. And of course, if the trend is up, you want to focus your attention on those bull funds that go up in value when that market is going up. And conversely, in a certain market that's declining sharply, well, then those are where the bear funds come in because their aim is to increase in value when those assets fall. So that's rule number one, only use leveraged ETFs in sharply trending markets. Rule number two is don't use or don't follow or don't own too many markets. And this is kind of a mistake that some investors make, is that they're all over the place. And what happens is when you're all over the place and you're spread across so many different areas, you end up losing focus and losing track of what's going on with your portfolio, what's going on with your investments, and it ends up coming back to bite you. So with leveraged ETFs, You've got obviously funds that follow a variety of different asset classes beyond stocks and beyond bonds. You've got funds that track currencies and commodities and real estate and volatility and all these different areas. And while it's nice to have a breadth of different choices, the problem is when you're simultaneously trading too many markets, it can become very distracting. And often distraction leads to losses. So that's rule number two, don't own too many markets. And finally, rule number three, leveraged ETFs are not buy and hold investments. I mean, this is very important. So when you buy a leveraged ETF, understand that you're making a short-term trade. You're not making a long-term investment. And generally, a short-term trade is one that lasts anywhere from one day up to several weeks. If you're buying a leveraged ETF as a long-term investment, well, you're doing it all the wrong way. You're using the tool the wrong way. It's comparable to using a screwdriver to doing a hammer's job. You use a screwdriver to do a screwdriver's job. You use a hammer to do a hammer's job, not switching the responsibilities or the functions of the tools. And so it's the same with the leveraged ETFs. They're short-term instruments, short-term trades, not long-term investments. And then I'll add as a bonus rule, you know this, if you're a regular listener to this program, where do the leveraged ETFs, which portfolio do they go into? Do they go into your core portfolio or do they go into the non-core? Well, I think you know the answer to that question because non-core portfolio always owns non-core assets. And certainly leveraged ETFs, long and short, qualify as non-core types of assets. And so that's the perfect place for a non-core portfolio. But your core portfolio never owns leveraged ETFs just because that's not the place for that type of asset. So those are Ron DeLegge's rules, three rules for trading leveraged ETFs. 877-711-5611 is the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. If you'd like to get your portfolio report card, where I tell you the strengths and the weaknesses of your investments, go to portfolioreportcard.com. Also, my March ETF Profit Strategy newsletter is out. And if you'd like to get a copy and become a subscriber, just go to etfguide.com and click on the ETF Profit Strategy newsletter and subscribe. Got another question here from CL in Plano, Texas. Dear Ron, how many ETFs do I need to own to have a balanced and diversified portfolio? Well, here's the answer. One of the common investing fallacies that some people have is that the number of holdings within your investment portfolio should increase as your portfolio's value increases. But this is wrong. Why? Because having a well-rounded investment portfolio is never determined by how many funds or ETFs that a person owns, but rather making sure that the funds you own, the assets that you own, are invested in areas that are distinctly different from each other. And that's the key. Different from each other. For example, a portfolio that holds just five ETFs in different investment categories like international stocks, U.S. stocks, commodities, bonds, and global real estate would definitely be more balanced and more diversified compared to a portfolio that owns 10 large cap stock ETFs and nothing else. So put another way, a well-rounded portfolio can achieve balance and diversification by owning just a few ETFs that are distributed across a variety of different asset classes. So again, for emphasis, the key is always variety, not quantity. In summary, regardless of whether your investments are worth $1,000, $100,000, or $100 million, you don't need a complicated portfolio with lots of holdings or quantity to achieve a well-rounded state. Like we just discussed, just a few carefully selected ETFs in different areas can and will get the job done and bring you that well-balanced state, that well-rounded portfolio that you're seeking. If you'd like to send me a question, comment, or a complaint, send it to ron@indexshow.com. Be sure to put your first name along with your city. If you want me to talk about any specific ticker symbols, whether they be individual stocks, mutual funds, or ETFs, also be sure to include those ticker symbols, and I will get to them. Well, I hope you enjoyed that great interview that we just did with Gary Annatici, the author of that brand new book, Dual Momentum Investing. This is part of what we do, is bring in other people that I think add value and add some unique ideas to help you with your overall investment strategies so that you can get ahead and stay ahead. And of course, you can read my articles. I write daily articles at etfguide.com. I encourage you to check out some of those articles. For those of you that ever miss our regular radio broadcast, you can pick up our podcast. It's available at iTunes as well as Stitcher Radio. And you can listen at your leisure. Just search for us under the Index Investing Show and you will find us. Now, coming up on next week's show, we'll be doing a portfolio report card. Of course, this week we took a little bit of a break, but this is where we analyze and grade listener portfolios and tell you how others are investing and saving their money. So stay tuned for that on next week's show. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.